Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Scheltemer, my co-host Felicity Sitnell-Reed, and our guest this week, Vicky Delaney. Vicky, how do you manage to produce so much? 16 books, not that many years. Do you have a writing routine? Do you plan out your books before you start writing?
I'm prolific. I don't really know why. It just sort of happens the way it is. I have a very strict routine that I absolutely have to keep to. Part of the reason for that is I'm not that fond of the writing process. It's not something that I look forward to doing every day, and I love to do it. I mean, I enjoy it, but it is something that I would always find something else to do. So I find that I need to have a strict routine, and if I follow the strict routine, then I'm not tempted to wander off and do something else. So I write every morning, probably for somewhere between 3 and 4 hours. If I'm having a good day, it might stretch to 4.5, but not usually more than that.
One of your standalone novels, More Than Sorrow, is set in Prince Edward County. It's been called a modern gothic novel, and the heroine, already suffering from PTSD, faces a terrifying threat. Can you tell us a little about the book and why you gave it such a gentle country setting?
Country setting for two reasons, because I live in Prince Edward County now, and I really wanted to set a book there just because I was getting to know the place, and I felt that there was an awful lot that I could put into the book that I was learning about the new place I lived. But the other reason, and perhaps the main reason, is the country setting is supposed to be a very sharp contrast to what's going on with the ugliness underneath. The question is whether this woman who's been injured in an IED explosion in Afghanistan, whether her enemies have followed her back to the peaceful county of Prince Edward. And there's the question also, because there's an Afghan refugee living there, has her past come to follow her? Have ugly things from the outside world crept into the peaceful county setting that they find themselves in?
Yeah, that would be a really interesting juxtaposition, and very pertinent for today's world too. But now you're also embarking on a new series, a cozy series. So tell us about that, and maybe explain to readers what a cozy is versus a procedural.
Cozy essentially means very, very soft read. They're hugely popular right now in the U.S. They're not as popular in Canada. I'm not entirely sure why, but as long as they're popular, I'm happy to write one. I'm writing two series, actually. I have two contracts, one with Imprint of Penguin called Obsidian for the Lighthouse Library series, which is set in a lighthouse that has a library in it on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. And the second is the Christmas Town series, which is set in the fictional town of upstate New York, where they celebrate Christmas and solve murders all year round.
Good heavens, that must be a very busy place. Perhaps now you could read us another excerpt from a different book.
Okay, I'm going to read from By Book or By Crook, which is the first in the Lighthouse Library series. And I should also mention, by the way, that this series is being written under a pen name. I'm using the name of Eva Gates rather than my own name, Vicky Delaney, that all my other books are published under. Main reason for that is this is actually a work for hire, meaning that I was given the proposal. Proposal consisted of an outline of the characters, the setting, and a very rough guideline to the plot. So because they own the characters and the setting, I'm using a false name, because if they ever wanted to have anybody else write the series, which they're entitled to do, they could keep the name. Okay. The Christmas Town books are being written under my own name of Vicky Delaney. Okay, so this is just a little thing just to set the scene a little bit. Characters referred to are here are going to be Butch, which is a handsome young police officer, and Charles, who is the library cat. The main character's name is Lucy. Between us, we got Charles, his few possessions, and the collected works of Jane Austen up the twisting black iron stairs to the fourth floor. I tossed Charles into the bathroom so he couldn't escape while my back was turned, and then cleared off my small desk by simply sweeping books and papers onto the floor. Butch put the Austen collection down with, I was pleased to see, the care and relevance it deserved. "Good night, Lucy," he said, and he left. I closed the door behind him and leaned my back against it. I kicked off my shoes. So much had been happening that I'd forgotten how much my feet hurt. Now that I was alone, they were reminding me. I was pleased that I had the foresight to make my bed and tidy my room before going to the party. I'm not normally known for my housekeeping abilities. After all, I didn't know people actually made beds until I went away to college. I thought everyone's sheets tucked themselves in, and clothes bounded willingly onto hangers and into closets. Makeup spills magically disappeared, and the carpet had a self-operating vacuum. Okay, I'm not quite that sheltered. I knew the maid did those things. I just never appreciated that it was work. When I visited the Outer Banks on a summer vacation, I was expected to do the same chores as my cousins. But somehow, being on holiday at the beach, wrapped in the loving, chaotic embrace of Aunt Helen and Uncle Amos's home, chores seemed more like play than work. My accommodations on the fourth floor of the Body Island Lighthouse were small but absolutely perfect. I had one room plus the bathroom. The whitewashed walls curved with the structure of the lighthouse. Cheerful watercolors by local artists, a variety of Outer Banks scenes added bursts of color. The iron day bed, painted a glossy white, was tucked in a corner, covered in a thick quilt of yellow and red flowers and mounds of sage pillows. I'd picked wildflowers this morning and propped them into a vase on my bedside table, on top of my TBR pile. To be read. All the books awaiting my undivided attention. The leap seemed to grow every time I looked at it. More of my TBR pile was stacked on the seat nestled into the window alcove. My favorite thing in the room, the seat was tiny and perfect, covered in cushions matching those on the bed. The room had only one window, long and thin, with a spectacular view over the marshes to the pure, unspoiled natural refuge beaches and the sea. The walls were 4.5 feet thick at this point, the window about 3 feet wide, making a perfect one-person reading recess. Although I was 4 stories up, with no one between my refuge and the open sea, the windows came with heavy curtains. Down below, this might be a busy library, but it was still a working lighthouse, and the First Order Fresnel lens maintained the rhythm of 2.5 seconds on, 2.5 seconds off, 2.5 on, and 22.5 seconds off. At night, the 1,000-watt bulb could be seen 40 miles out to sea, warning ships to veer away from the coast as danger lay to the south. Now the storm was breaking and a sliver of moonlight shone on wave-tossed black water. Lights from ships far out to sea blinked on the horizon. I pulled the curtains too as the lamp came on and brilliant white light flooded into my room. I had a small area for entertaining, a couple of comfortable wingback chairs around a low coffee table, plus a work area with a desk and a minuscule kitchen. I let Charles out of the bathroom and unzipped my dress. The phone rang. I mostly made use of a landline here. Cell reception in these stone walls was poor and unreliable. Bertie had told me if I kept the iPhone on the window seat, it might receive calls, and if I wanted to talk, it helped open the window and lean out. My first thought was Mother. She'd heard about the murder and was calling to order me home. I glanced at the display. A local call. Hello? Lucy, it's Connor. Oh, Connor, hi. I know it's ridiculously late to be calling, but I wanted to check up on you. I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to say goodbye, but Detective Watson hustled us out of the library so fast, my head's still spinning. Are you okay? I'm fine. You saw the body. That can be upsetting. You found it too, Connor. I should probably ask if you're okay. I sat on the edge of my bed and wiggled my toes to bring some life back into them. A deep chuckle came down the line. I will admit I poured myself a stiff bourbon as soon as I got in. I wasn't really expecting you to answer. I'm surprised the police let you stay. I'm under orders to remain in my room. That will not be a problem. I have absolutely no desire to poke around downstairs. An image of Mr. Upperton popped unwelcome into my head. Mr. Upperton, lying on the floor, dead. I shuddered and gathered a couple of cushions into my lap.
Thank you, Vicky. I love the atmosphere of that whole piece. Lovely. Could you remind listeners where they might get your book?
Okay, my books are generally available pretty much everywhere. Certainly they are in Books & Company in Picton, online, Amazon, and all the usual sources. Most libraries in this area, most Chapters stores, the earlier books might not be in stock, but you can always order them through Chapters if you want to. So generally they're available everywhere. Good books are sold.
Thanks very much, and thanks for joining us today and giving us such delightful readings.
Thank you.
And thanks, too, to our listeners for tuning in today. If you'd like to contact us with any comments or suggestions, please write to us at wordonthehills897@gmail.com. And if you've missed any programs and would like to listen to our archives, they can be found on our website, wordonthehills.com. Thanks again for tuning in. I hope you'll join us next week.